We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Coast to Coast on the Her Hoop Stats Podcast Network. I'm Karina Mustafa alongside Calvin Wetzel. We're so excited to get into this week's episode because we have a lot to get through. We're going to talk about a new deal that the NCAA inked with ESPN that includes college women's basketball. We're also going to talk about the Ann Myers Drysdale Awards. We have our top 10 watch list for best shooting guard in the country. I say as I'm in Canada, but I mean the United States. And then finally, at the end, we'll go through some game recaps from the weekend, as well as preview three upcoming matchups for you to watch in college basketball. Cal, you ready?
I am ready. You didn't ask me last week if I was ready, and I feel like it threw everything off, but I am ready.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was like we were getting back in the groove because of the new year and like load management. We had a minutes restriction and all that. Now we're like full go, so everything's all good. And shout out to you. We talked about this last week. Shout out to you today as we record starting your internship for Canada Basketball. Repping Canada with the sweatshirt that you have that everyone should watch YouTube just to see. It's really cool. So I wanted to get that in there. Shouts to you, Karina.
Thanks, Cal. Yeah, I can't believe I didn't ask you if you were ready last week. I didn't even realize that. I'm so
Yeah, you really dropped the ball on that.
You know what? Last week was like, you know when you make a batch of pancakes and the first one always comes out a little wonky? So like that was our first show of 2024 after a long holiday load management. I'm just going to chalk it up to that. This is the real version now. We're on week two of 2024.
We're getting the good pancakes now. Yep.
We're getting good fluffy pancakes now. Anyway, speaking of starting fresh, starting anew in the new year, let's start with this new deal that the NCAA announced just last week, where NCAA and ESPN have signed an 8-year, $920 million extension to their current media rights package, including the ever-growing Women's March Madness tournament. The deal, which will begin on September 1st, will pay out an average of $115 million per year, with Women's March Madness valued at $65 million out of that number. The contract will end in 2032, which ironically is the same year that my passport expires. So that's that's a funny number. But to correspond with the end of the men's tournament deal that they have with CBS and Warner Bros. Discovery, Cal, these are a lot of numbers. And I think when you get past the numbers, there was a quote that kind of really stuck out to me from this press release where Hillary Mandel, who's the EVP and head of the Americas for Media at IMG, says, "We didn't do a renewal. This is a reset." And that's kind of what stuck out. That's the quote that's in the tweet that we just put up. What do you think that means? This is not a renewal. This is a reset.
Yeah, we're starting fresh, right? With like, we didn't really just take that old deal and kind of revamp it. This is a whole new thing, which is great. I think like there's a lot of pros and cons in here that we can get into both sides. Like, and I'm definitely not an economics major. Like, I know I do all the stats and numbers and stuff, but when it comes to like the financial side, I don't want to say stuff I don't know what I'm talking about, but there's definitely some good here. Obviously, like you said, the numbers, I think overall it's 3 times as big as the last deal. The women's basketball portion in particular, I want to say it was 9 or 10 times what it was from the previous deal, which is obviously as it should be. It should be growing exponentially because that's what the sport is doing. So the dollars attached to it should be doing that as well. I do think that this is one of those deals where we're going to look at it in 2032 and probably think it's a steal, even if maybe that's what the value is right now, because like this past deal really wasn't terrible when it was signed, but now this past year everyone's been looking at it like this is an absolute steal by ESPN. Like the trajectory that the sport is on is such that like these dollar figures are going to look really minuscule by the time we get to that point. That's what I think. But obviously the growth is really important to see too.
Yeah, and like even on the basketball, when you think about what's about to happen in the next couple of years with the WNBA, like even just outside of the NCAA with like the CBA negotiations coming up and like all this change that is about to happen, I feel like from where we are now in 2024 to 2032, I think women's sports and women's basketball is going to change so much. So like, yeah, you're exactly right in saying that who knows what these numbers will look like when we do get to the end of that deal and what that could potentially mean for the future of the women's tournament in general. I think for me, this quote really stood out because the words are very intentional. And I think that's so important when it comes to discussing different issues in women's sports. Like, being intentional is one of the most important things because the structure of kind of the sports system has been a way in the past that has been against sustaining women's sports and against growing it, against even starting it in a lot of different cases. And so I think there are a lot of areas that instead of maybe trying to get better at it, they need a reset. Like, we need to just go back to the drawing board and be like, okay, how can we give women's sports the same amount of resources that their male counterparts have in order to make sure everybody has fair chances to get into the sport, has fair chances to have a long career and like just be sustainable overall. So I really like that quote a lot just because of the intentionality that came behind it. And with that deal too, they announced there's going to be more resources being put into storytelling. So it's not just a TV deal with ESPN, but there's going to be stuff like longer form content being done. What do you hope to see in that form as being like someone that's half of a podcast who we are working on covering women's basketball when it comes to like tournament coverage now? What do you hope to see?
Yeah, the storytelling is so important. So I just hope to see that sort of develop fans. I think your Twitter bio says, let's tell stories or something, right? Like,
I think I changed it, but it did used to say that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's just a really important part. I think in any sport, it doesn't matter what you're talking about, women's or men's or college or pro or whatever. Like, fans are developed when they sort of get to know players' stories. And not just their game on the court, on the field, but who they are as people and where they come from and what drives them. And when fans get to know those things about players, they start to relate. They start like, oh, this star is just like me. You know, like I like video games. They like video games, whatever. I don't know. And they start to tune in. They start to follow these players. That happens to me. I don't know about you. That happens to me all the time when I read a story and I'm like, wow, this is like, this player, I relate so much to this story. Like, this is so cool. I really start liking them as a person. And then I'm like, all right, I'm going to watch their games now, you know, and root for them. And so that's what I hope to see, is just sort of the development, the continued development of fans through that storytelling.
It's true. I mean, I cannot look at Cody McMahon anymore without thinking about the Grinch, because they did a segment on how obsessed she is with the Grinch. Like, guys, like, if you guys haven't seen this, I remember watching this. Like, I was actually with Mark and we were watching. We're like, what? Like, we never knew this about her. She's got like so many Grinch plush toys. She has like Grinch themed shoes. Like, she has to take some kind of like Grinch plushie with her to games. It's like she's got a Grinch obsession. And I never would have known that about her until they did this segment on her. So like, honestly, it's stuff like that that like I hope to see, like even outside of basketball things, like just this like weird, wacky part of a player's life that you maybe didn't know. And now that just makes them a little bit more endearing, and you remember the name and because you associate it with something. And even just overall, I think there's so much potential with this new deal to do both long form and short form coverage, like whether that's like hiring people who have been working in women's basketball coverage for so long, who are maybe doing some social media stuff or are doing more of those like longer interviews, documentaries, like all these different forms of content. I feel like with this new digital age, there's just so much potential to cater towards like what anybody finds interesting. And not to go too long on a tangent, but when I first entered women's basketball, one of the biggest questions that I had from people, or like one of the biggest concerns, was like, I want to get into women's basketball, but I just don't know the players. And people need to find a way to relate to them. And if it's something like, oh, this player has got an obsession with the Grinch, like, then so be it. Like, I love little stories like that. And I'm hoping to see more of that when this new deal kicks in next year.
Yeah, and I love what you said about like just hiring content creators and people like that in the women's basketball space, or really women's sports. Like this deal, I mean, volleyball is part of it. Like, it's bigger than just basketball. But to me, like that, you know, like you and I both know this. It's so hard to be a full time content creator in women's basketball if you really want to get to that point. Like, you almost have to start covering other sports as well. But that's not the case with men's basketball. That's not the case with, I know football is a bigger deal than any other sport, men's or women's, but just there's a lot of sports where you can cover full time. And I think women's basketball is getting to that point where people need to be investing in people to cover it full time. So hopefully this will help with that. And like, before we move on, I also just feel like one of the things that we have to talk about it is the units. I think Dawn Staley has talked about that. I know some other coaches say about this is the unit system that exists in men's basketball, not in women's, where if, you know, I'm probably going to get some of these details wrong. So, you know, sorry in advance to listeners, go check me on this stuff. But the general structure is that like in men's basketball, if you make the tournament and you win a game and you win another game and so on, every game that you play, your conference gets paid a certain share of that money, which is called a unit. And so it incentivizes athletic department, and then they distribute those, right? So it incentivizes them to want to be good at men's basketball. Because if you're good at men's basketball and you advance in the tournament, you get more money. But that's not the case with women's basketball. Those payouts don't come when they make the tournament or when they advance in the tournament. And I don't get it. Like, why not? It really should, because then athletic departments have incentive to pour these resources into being good at women's basketball. So I think that's the next step. This deal is like obviously a really good step in the right direction. But there's some stuff we really need to see going forward too.
Yeah, absolutely. And stuff like this is always going to spark conversation just like this. So I think that's also another avenue of just looking for where there could be more resources. And then you get resources plus time, and we're going to go along at a good pace. But yeah, that's the new mega deal that was announced last week. Let us know your thoughts on it. If you have maybe any other ideas and how, you know, women's sports deserves resources and where those could possibly be. But coming up next, we're going to go through our top 10 watch lists for the best shooting guard in the country for the Ann Myers Drysdale Award, because our very own Cal is a voter.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, Mr. Voter, Cal. First of all, tell us a little bit about this award, how you came about being a voter, and kind of what's been going through your mind as you've been kind of putting this list of players together.
Yeah, so we actually have a voter on Her Hoop Stats for each of these five positional awards. And so at the beginning of the year, the committee basically reached out and was like, hey, do you guys have someone who could be on each of these lists? And we kind of, there was a few of us who basically took, all right, you take point guard, you take shooting guard, whatever. So I got shooting guard. And it's fun. It's fun. It's like, it's tough. because the positions thing is so hard. Like in today's basketball, it's not, people talk about positionless basketball and there are kind of still positions, but there's not really five positions anymore. There's two or three positions. And you're splitting hairs with a lot of these players. So putting together my list, there's some players who, but that's the good thing that we, about us having our team that has, we have a voter on every position. So I can talk to Aaron or Jacob and say, all right, are you including this player on your small forward list? Okay. I won't have them on my shooting guard list or vice versa. And it's a little bit easier this time around too, cause we put out, so they had the preseason top 20 watch list at the beginning of the year, which some of those positions I don't agree with, but that's fine. And so, but now I'm basically looking at that and like, all right, whatever position they were on for that one, I'm just going to go with that, whether I agree with it or not, and just kind of leave them on there. So, a few players are on this list that I'm calling a shooting guard because they did it at the beginning of the year. That's how it works. But it's definitely been like a fun process to put together.
That's good. There's that little disclaimer about the, I don't agree with it, but it's up there, so don't come.
Well,
at
yeah,
me.
I just want to say, like, if someone's not on this list and you're listening, like, before you come at me, like, check if they're on one of the other lists, because like there are
before
some players
haters come after us.
Would have if you want to hate on my list, hate on my list. But there are some players who I didn't leave off because I don't think they're top 10. I left them off because they're going to be a different position, and like I absolutely would have had them top 10. So just to put that out there.
You can leave that to people's discretion, though. They can decide which one is which.
They can. And if they want to hate, where to find me. That's all good.
In the YouTube comments. All right. Anyway, let's start this list because we got quite a bit to get through. We're going to go through the top 10, and then we've got a special mention at placeholder number 11. But let's start with number one, and that is Juju Watkins of USC. Cal, I mean, I think you and I can agree. She's probably one of the, if not the most exciting player in college basketball right now. How did you decide that she's number one? Although I have a feeling it was pretty easy. And what have you liked so much about her?
This was very, the hardest part of this was, is she a shooting guard or small forward? The hardest part wasn't, does she deserve to be on the list or where does she deserve to be? Because like you said, to me, she's second in National Player of the Year right now behind Caitlin Clark. So any list other than point guard, she would be number one on it pretty easily. So, and they did ask us to rank these 1 through 10. So this one was probably the easiest one, I would say, other than deciding which position she was.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. No, I really loved the way Juju has played with USC. We've talked about her a lot on this podcast. All right. Number two, we have none other than Miss Paige Weckers of UConn. Tell me what went into choosing her second.
Yeah, so obviously she's an All-American candidate, and she has a National Player of the Year under her belt. She's back this year. She's been healthy, knock on wood, all year, and she's been so efficient. She, you know, putting her at this position, like, that's where they had her at the beginning of the year. So she played point guard, you know, coming into college, but Nika Mule now runs the point. She kind of plays the four for them, some that we've talked about on this pod, but they had her at the two, so I'm putting her at the two. She's averaging over 20 points a game on really efficient scoring. That's what stands out to me. She's so efficient. So to me, she had to be number two on this list.
Yeah, and we love to see her back on these lists and back and being healthy, like you said, knock on wood. Okay, let's go to number three. We have Tania Latson of FSU. What have you liked about her game this year so far?
She's just so dynamic in the open floor, like you saw there, for a team that loves to get out and run. And she's really, I think, the last 2 years been a little bit underrated. She's a sophomore now. In terms of her scoring ability for Florida State, and I think she deserves to be like right up there in the conversation, right behind Paige Beckers, just nationally, you know, whether you're talking about shooting guards or not, just in terms of her scoring ability. So she's one of the most fun players to watch play, and I wish she got more national TV time. I think she's getting one that we're going to talk about a little bit later on this pod, but definitely love her game.
I love her shooting form too. I think she's got such a nice shot. There was something else I was going to say about her, but I forgot. So let's move on to number four, which is a player that we talked about last week, actually, which is JJ Quinterly. What have you liked about her that you maybe didn't only talk about last week on the pod?
Yeah, I could go on and on about her. You see her offensive game here, and there you see her at the top of the press in this highlight, which has been one of the biggest things that she's brought to press Virginia this year. She's their leader on both sides of the floor. You know, you see her wreaking havoc, but even in the half court offensively, what she's been able to do, she's one of the more improved scorers and passers in the country, I think. And so it was pretty easy for me to have her on this list and even in the top half.
I like it. I like it. Okay, we're heading up to number five. So we're at the middle of the pack here. And I decided to take a clip from, or to set the compilation of a clip from Mark Schindler's YouTube page. Make sure you go subscribe to that because he posts a lot of good clips. And he had this nice compilation. I searched up Madison Connor highlights, and this is one of the top videos. But Cal, what have you liked about Madison Connor with TCU this season?
Yeah, well, first off, by the way, Mark Schindler finally putting his pod on YouTube. So if you go to his YouTube page, you'll see his pod now, just today, I think. Madison Connor is the first player on this list, checking in at number five, who was not on the preseason top 20 list. The first four all were, but, well, actually, no, I'm wrong about that. Juju was not, which I think is stupid. Juju was not on any of the preseason list, I think, and I don't understand that. She was on, I should rephrase, this is the first one who was not on my preseason list. Juju was on mine. She didn't make the overall one. Someone explain that to me. Anyway, Madison Connor has skyrocketed up these boards. And we've talked about her and TCU a lot on this pod, but she's a flamethrower. I'll keep saying that. She's such an elite shooter, but so much more than that. Her ability to score at different levels and in different ways. And it's going to be even more important here in these next few weeks without Sedona Prince. So I've thoroughly enjoyed watching her play this year, and she's firmly one of the top 10 and I think one of the top five shooting guards in the country this year.
I forgot that you called her a flamethrower. That's a pretty sick nickname to have. All right, coming in at number six, unfortunately did not have time / the resources to put together her highlights, but we've got Abby Sue from Columbia. And you know, something that I've noticed this year is like the Ivy League is doing great. So, Cal, what have you really liked about her with Columbia so far?
Ivy League is so good. Ivy League basketball is something that I wish people, you know, I wish they got more credit because it's one of the better leagues in the country. And she is the player of the year in this league. She's one of the best mid-major. She's the first mid-major on this list, one of the best mid-major scorers across all of basketball at any position. And she's an elite rebounding guard, has a lot of size, someone that absolutely deserves this type of recognition. So very high on Abby Shue.
Yeah, love that. All right, coming in at number 7 is a player that we both really love. We've talked about her a lot on this podcast because we talked about UCLA a bunch. And that is none other than Charisma Osborne. I mean, what can we say about her? Like, she is so good at just finishing at the rim, scoring in general. Cal, what have you liked about her?
I love that we keep going down this list and we keep finding players that we have already given love to on this pod. It makes me feel like maybe we're doing something right. She's a significantly improved passer this year for UCLA and has been asked to do more of that. And really a key defender, too, in addition to the things that you mentioned. I think the last time we talked about her on this pod was about her defense on another player on this list, and Juju Watkins. And Charisma Osborne played very well in that matchup, all things considered.
All right, let's move on to number 8. We're getting closer to the bottom of this list. We have Sarah Scalia from Indiana. Is it Scalia or Scalia? My brain.
I believe it's Scalia. Scalia.
Scalia. Scalia. Okay. Scalia. Cool. I pronounce things weirdly sometimes, but what have you liked about her so far?
No, you're good. You're good. She's well, without Grace Berger in Indiana this year, she's taken on a much bigger scoring load, and she's done so with really good efficiency as well, which doesn't often happen when you are asked to do a lot more on the offensive end, that you increase your efficiency. But she has shooting 45% from three. She only missed one free throw all season, so I think she's been they were going to need someone to step up in the absence of Grace Berger. Obviously Mackenzie Holmes is always elite holding down the post, but in terms of that perimeter score, and she's really taking that on.
And at number 9, we've got Jazz Shelley of Nebraska, another team that we did talk about last week as one of our teams to watch in the month of January. What do you like about her game to have her on this top 10 list?
Yeah, she's one of the better passers on this list. She's really a combo guard and can play a lot of point. And she has done some of that throughout her career at Nebraska with some of the injuries, especially last year that they had. But she's one of 9 major conference players with a triple-double this year. She can, so that always tells you she can do it all. And her combination of, like we said, passing, but also her ability to shoot the ball. Last year, Jazz Shelley, Caitlin Clark, only 2 players in the country with 200 threes and 75 assists. No, maybe it was 75 threes and 200 assists. It was one or the other, whichever one makes more sense. 75 threes and 200 assists. That's what it was. I think I got my numbers flipped there, but either way, when you're in a conversation with Caitlin,
it's
Clark,
okay. It's a lot either way.
it's yeah, whatever it is, Caitlin Clark and Jazz Shelley shooting passing combo. That's what it was last year. So, and she came back for her 5th year and has really been leading Nebraska this year as well. So definitely she was on the preseason list and I think she has deserved to stay on it.
Yeah, I think she's a great pick on this top 10. And then coming in at number 10 is none other than oh God, help me out with the pronunciation, please.
Brenna Maxwell.
Brenna Maxwell. Thank you. I'm so sorry. Of Gonzaga. Another word that I don't know if it's ever Gonzaga or Gonzaga, but what have we got her so far? Oh God, pronunciations are kicking me in the butt today.
It's tough. It's tough. No stress. Yeah, she's been a great cog for Gonzaga's high level offense. And by the way, going back to Mark Schindler's pod, talked to another significant member of that offense today. His first YouTube clip of that pod was Yvonne Ejim. So go listen to that. I haven't actually listened to it myself yet. I plan to tonight, but I'm sure they talked about Brenna Maxwell some.
It's great. On that pod.
And Mark, you can tell me. Did they
also
did
a
they
Canada
talk about
basketball
Brenna?
Member?
Also yes, exactly. Member, so. There you go. There you
I'm
go.
Not spoiling it. Go listen to the pod. I'm not okay. Telling you if they did or not.
Okay, you're right. You're right. Good call. I know Mark and I got into Gonzaga's offense and talked about all of them, including Brenna, a little bit on a pod a few weeks ago, if anyone hasn't listened to that. But her shooting ability and her ability to come off staggers and pin downs and different types of screens, I think is key, you know, especially next to someone like Ejim, who anchors the post. And she's another one who's on the preseason list. This one was tough. There's a lot of players you could make an argument here for in this last spot, number 10. But to me, like, she was on the preseason list, and I don't think she's done anything to lose her spot. So I think she's been just as solid as she was last year, other than The 3-point percentage is down a little bit, but it was also one of the best in the country last year, upper 40s, and she's still in the 40s. She's still an elite shooter. So to me, she still definitely deserves to be on the top 10 list.
Yeah, Gonzaga being one of the more exciting teams this season so far. So there you go. There is your top 10 list. And I know you have a very special mention at number 11. And I won't make the terrible joke about her name that I made off the pod. But who do you have coming in that special slot at number 11, Kel?
Yeah, I feel like
not at the bottom of any list.
No, absolutely not. She... I feel like we had to give someone a shout out just for being so close at someone who a lot of people probably haven't heard of, Izzy Higginbottom from Arkansas State. I thought long and hard about having her on this list, and to me, she checks in just short at number 11. But like you said, she's not at the bottom of any list. She's number 11 out of like thousands of players. And what she's done for Arkansas State this year, a team that most people probably aren't familiar with, player that most people aren't familiar with, she's averaging over 20 points a game on great shooting, and she's you watch some of their they've had some close games too. They had a comeback in overtime the other day against I want to say it was North Alabama that she really took over, and I think she deserves some love. I can't quite get to her above any of these players on the top 10, and obviously level of competition matters, and that's one thing about Brenna Maxwell I think that edges her out, is that Gonzaga has played elite competition. So their strength of schedule, Brenna Maxwell is doing it against some high level teams and high level defenses. But I couldn't not get through this segment and at least give Izzy Higginbottom some love for how close it's remarkable that someone from Arkansas State even had me thinking about putting her on the top 10 here.
All right. So there you have it. There's our top 10, or say Cal's top 10 plus 11. I'll say them one more time, hopefully all the correct way, so that people have the top 10 list. So obviously we had our special mention, Izzy Higginbottom at number 11. Then starting at number 10, Brenna Maxwell, Jazz Shelley, Sarah Scalia, Charisma Osborne, Abby Shu, Madison Connor, JJ Quinterly, Tania Latson. Paige Beckers and Juju Watkins. You know, for somebody who says a lot of like really hard names in tennis, you'd think I would get the hang of it by now. But English is not my first language, so my brain likes to say things in the Romanian way, and then I get messed up because I can never remember which way is the correct way.
So if anyone tries to come at you, they should know that Karina has an excuse for this. Like,
I have a goldfish brain.
That's not what the excuses I was gonna say, but no.
Is that I pronounce things in a Romanian way.
Yeah, it's fair. I feel like when announcers get names wrong, it's like sometimes it bothers me, but that's because they're American, they're English, they should know this. I feel like
I'll never forget this is like tennis related, but just to give you guys kind of like a glimpse into how my brain works. So there's something called the Laver Cup, which happens every year in tennis. And it's like a team event. It's named after Rod Laver. So it's named after a person. And I'll never forget, I went on the tennis podcast that I was working on at the time, and I said the Laver Cup. And my two co-hosts literally died laughing at me because I didn't even realize in the moment. I just said it because my brain thought that that was the way. And then they were like, Karina, it's Laver. And I was like, see, I knew that, but my mouth didn't say it. So that's a little glimpse into that. But all that being said, that is the top 10 list. If you have anything that, yes, Cal, what do you want to say?
No, I feel like I don't mean to cut you off. I forgot something that I was going to say that's really important. So with this list, someone who would have been on my list, except she's on the small forward list, is Mara Braun. And I had to bring her up because I have to I'm obligated to shout out Eric Bugard. Now my turn to mispronounce names. I think I am pronouncing your name correctly, Bugard. But anyway, Eric told me that he was asking me, when am I going to start wearing Minnesota stuff? Big Minnesota fan. I told him, listen, if you send me something, I will wear it on the pod and give you a shout out. So he kept his word. He sent me this hoodie. So Eric, I'm wearing it on the pod, and I'm shouting you out. Thank you for this hoodie. It's so cool. I love it. And I would have had Mara on my list, but she was on the preseason small forward list, and I think she's going to be on the top 10 small forward list. But anyway, I love this hoodie. Thank you. Had to get that in there.
We're getting a lot of requests on this podcast to talk about things.
Listen, if anyone wants to send me gear, I will wear it on the pod. I will take free gear for wearing it on the pod. I think that's a great trade. Just throwing it out there for all our listeners.
Not you accepting bribes live on the show.
Not above it.
Incredible. Not above it. Okay, I hope maybe doesn't hear that. That's the top 10 list with our special mention, of course. Make sure you let us know on social media whether or not you agree with that, any players that you think we're missing, and we will happily engage with you in the comments. All right, let's move on to our third and final segment before we wrap up the show. We're going to recap two exciting games that happened this past Sunday. I feel like Sunday was such a packed day of games. Like, the Pac-12 had just close games on all day, and I'm so sorry for the people that like don't get the Pac-12, and I, you know, get it on my trusty IPTV up here in Canada, but all the games were super awesome. But these two specific games, and I'll put the graphic back up for YouTube watchers, we're going to recap Virginia Tech and NC State and Arizona and Utah. Both, I think both ended by like a 1 point differential, and yeah, at the very last second, which I thought was cool. We'll start with Virginia Tech and NC State because that one happened first. Cal, what was your like initial reactions to the buzzer beater and just like the game overall?
It was such a good game. So, well, first off, you missed an opportunity when you said that we had a packed slate of action and the Pac-12 was really good. I feel like there's a pun in there somewhere, and
there,
I expect you,
you
to be the one to find
you
it.
You know what? Well,
you're the pun queen.
That's true.
And
that's true.
I really thought it was coming, but no.
See,
Sunday
last
was
week I didn't ask you if you were ready last week, so I've just been dropping the ball on a lot of things. Okay.
You need to step up your game, Karina. I'm telling you. No, Sunday was a great week of basketball, wasn't it, though? You do.
Yeah.
Sunday was a great week of basketball, though, for sure. I think it felt like that. It felt like a whole week in one day. Yeah. This game, to me, like, I don't know. Virginia Tech definitely showed me something, because I think they've had a few big games this year where you talk about the Iowa game, the LSU game, where it looked like obviously they've looked great, but they get up against that level of competition and it looks like they're just kind of one step short. And it started to feel like that in this game too. It started to feel like another one of those games, same story. NC State was up, I believe, double digits. Felt like, you know, Virginia Tech's going to do the same thing that happens when they get against this high level competition. And to see them make that run, and then the way that the game finished on both sides was incredible. And we have to talk about the finish. I know we have a couple of videos. So we should put up the video first of how this game ended. Obviously, it was back and forth. And we had right before this, NC State takes the lead. And then more or less a buzzer beater, essentially, from Elizabeth Kitley here on the ATO, which Kenny Brooks, amazing ATO coach, amazing situational coach, like baseline out of bounds, sideline out of bounds. And you know, Sanaya Rivers scores with 2 seconds left, a great take against Elizabeth Kitley on the baseline for her. And then we get this play, which, can you put it back up?
I can. It's like, just when you think it's over, it's not.
It's not, because we have this great sideline out of bounds with Georgia Amor setting a screen. Like a little, I don't know if you call it a flex screen when it goes the other way or not, like a cross screen for Kitley, and put it up one more time, because what stood out to me, can we like pause it on here or no? Does it let us see that?
I have no idea.
Okay, maybe not. Well, it's fine. Keep playing it, because okay. So Zoe Brooks is not guarding the ball for NC State. She's on the block. They basically have 3-on-2. If you look down, like around where all the action is happening, there's 3 white jerseys and 2 maroon or whatever jerseys. And so clearly NC State, between that and the way that Sanaya Rivers is guarding Amor there, I guess like top locking her, you can tell that NC State is trying really hard to protect against Amor coming towards the ball, towards that baseline on the top of your screen, or that sideline on the top of your screen, which is what set this up perfectly, because they run it the other way. Kittley comes off the screen away from the ball, is wide open because NC State's so focused on that other side. Zoe Brooks ends up being a non-factor in the play, even though they put her there to, you know, instead of putting her on the ball in order to basically like be a rover and take that away. So it's just brilliant stuff from Kenny Brooks. And the thing I love the most, I'm a sucker for like shooters setting screens. So Georgia Amore setting a screen here, being and using her to get Kittley open, something that I love that they did. And put up the other clip now. They did this once last year too on a game winner. Not the same play. Same concept though. Amore setting a screen here for Kittley. Tie game, and Kittley knocks it down at the buzzer for the winner. The same concept of using Georgia Amore's gravity to basically use her as a screener and get Kittley open. I love what Kenny Brooks did here, and I love the concept in general, and I love him so much as an X's and O's coach. So I think this was just really cool to see it on display.
Yeah. And in case you guys didn't get it from me playing the clip 27 times on YouTube, I'll play it one more time.
Play it one more time. Why not?
Just a beautiful play. You're so right, though. Yeah. What a play. Oh, my God. What a game. Yeah, that was an incredible matchup. And I know we're going to be talking more about NC State as well in the next couple of weeks on the pod. So, yeah, great breakdown, great play. And then the other game was Arizona defeating Utah. That was a very exciting game. Obviously, we know like Arizona's been a pretty consistent team in the past, but this year has been a little bit up and down. And Utah obviously has been pretty solid. But I think watching that game, one of my takeaways was, I'm so sorry, but the refs were just not great. They were very whistle heavy on Utah's side. So like, it's pretty impressive that Arizona came out on top just based on that alone. And I'm not going to say I'm a person that normally doesn't care about the refs, because I do care about the refs and they make me pretty angry. So they made me angry in this case too. And we don't get fined for that, so I'm okay with talking about it. But I just, the way that they were, I think, like blowing the whistle on Alyssa Peely versus like anybody else on Arizona State was just a little bit frustrating. But I thought Arizona overall did a good job of playing against that matchup. They had two players above that both had a 20-point game in Kaylin Gilbert and Helena Pueyo. They were both really impressive. I like that. Kaylin Gilbert is so fast. I mean, I think one of my biggest takeaways from that game was Arizona did have a couple of like questionable drives to the rim at certain points in the game where they were just not finishing great. And I was like, okay, well, this cannot be the way. Until the game went to overtime and they were in the last couple of minutes and Gilbert is just like running to the basket and she's finishing every single time. And I'm just like, oh my God, there she goes again. And just has like the defense falling. I thought that was super cool to watch. And then they were able to get the very, very tight win at the end there by 1 point, but just overall a really good showing from Arizona. I feel like gritty was a good way to describe that win, because it didn't feel like super solid. It kind of felt like they had just kind of ran away with it a little bit there at the end. But, you know, Utah is no easy opponent. So I thought overall that was a very good win for them. As for Utah, I think, have they dropped a couple in a row now, if I'm not mistaken?
Two out of three.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one was a little bit, I think Alyssa Peely didn't really have the best game. I can't remember what she ended up finishing with, but that she was definitely like being taken out of rhythm and definitely settling for shots, I feel like, on the offense a little bit when I was watching. It was like a little bit, I don't know what the right word is, maybe a bit like laggy at certain points where like it felt like Arizona was just kind of swarming her and she didn't really know where to pass it at times, or just settling for some maybe clunkier shots that weren't really falling as nicely. But yeah, overall, that's kind of my thoughts on the game. Really good win from Arizona. Really exciting. I've also been loving Adia Barnes' outfits this season on the sideline. She's been killing it. She had this one outfit that was all like sequins and sparkly that Made for the W posted on their social accounts that I thought was really cool. She looked really stressed in this game, but her outfit was really nice as always. But yeah, those are my takeaways. Great win, great outfit. I think whoever dresses the best will come away with a win.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that takeaway. Some of the stuff you said, though, was definitely interesting because I couldn't watch this game live, but watching it back. So the first thing I noticed, like a couple possessions in, you talked about the calls and the refs and stuff. And so the game before this, Alyssa Pealey didn't play the second half. She left the game with an injury. And then after the game, Lynn Roberts, Utah's head coach, basically went off about how like the refs don't protect her, they don't give her calls, blah blah blah, and
so they overcorrected.
Like, yep, I think it's safe to say that Lynn putting that out there had an effect, because even in the very I think it was the second possession, first minute of the game, Pealey had what I would consider a pretty easy offensive foul call, just completely extended her arm out. I want to say it was Esmeri Martinez, I forget who exactly, and they called a block, which right away I was like, all right, so Pealey's getting the calls in this game, huh? Didn't get him last game. Her coach stands up for her, as you should. Good for a coach. Always stand up for your player. And it clearly worked. So that was a great point by you, because that was something that stood out to me. And then you're talking about like her maybe not knowing what the right pass to make, settling for some shots. I think it was at the end of overtime. Yeah. At the end of overtime, she had this, that three that got blocked by Pueyo, Elena Pueyo, who, by the way, like you said, incredible game on both sides of the ball, dropped 20. And it's cool. It's cool, 'cause she's a fifth year and she's the only player on this.
There were some foul calls on her that I did not agree with.
Yeah,
like she would breathe and the ref would whistle on her. And I'd be like, come on, man. Like, that's not
at home. At home. Yeah. And she just played through it because she's a fifth year and that's what she does. And she's the only player on this team who played in that championship game a few years ago with Ari McDonald and all of them. So it's cool to see what she's doing now. The only holdover. But to me, like, so obviously talked about what she did on the offensive end scoring wise, but on the defensive end, at the end of regulation and at the end of overtime, she made a huge play helping off of Ines Vieira. That's the one I think I'm saying correctly, for Utah. At the end of regulation, Pueyo helped off her in the corner and stopped. It was Deja Young, I think, cutting. It was actually great ATO. It almost ended up being, we almost ended up having this conversation about two great sideline out of bounds ATO game winners with Virginia Tech and Utah with like 1 second left. But Pueyo came over and helped, enforce the miss on that cut and sent it into overtime. And then at the end of overtime, same thing, not same play, but she helped off Vieta again. And this is where they had enough time on the clock that Pealey should have swung it over to Vieta, who was wide open, who would have been able to get just in like the most open shot that you'll ever have. And I think Utah was up one at the time, and it was around 30 seconds left. So it would have been almost a dagger. It would have put them up four if they're able to get that shot hit. Instead, Pueyo comes over to help, gets the block, and they end up getting a shot clock violation. And then Arizona goes down and wins it down one instead of down four in the next possession. So Elena Pueyo, unbelievable performance. Two of the most clutch defensive plays helping that you will see in addition to her scoring. And I think she really, really, I love that you brought her up because she was huge for Arizona getting this win.
Yeah, no, I was really impressed with her. That was a really, really exciting game among all the other exciting games on Sunday. Like you said, it did really feel like a week in one day, but it was a lot of really good basketball, and that's always a good problem to have. And speaking of good basketball, we've got some games coming up in this next week for you to watch. I'll put up the graphic here for our YouTube watchers. We've got TCU versus Texas on January 10 at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Longhorn Network. Then we've got University of Northern Carolina, not California, versus FSU. That was not nearly the same thing. And they just got the win over, I think they beat Notre Dame on Sunday, right? Or is my memory?
North Carolina did beat Notre Dame, yep.
Yes. Okay. They just got the win over Notre Dame, and now we'll face FSU on January 11 at 6 p.m. Eastern on ACC Network. And then we've got Stanford versus Utah on January 12 on Pac-12 Network. Stanford also was another one of those close games on Sunday against Washington State. So until it was no longer a close game, but it was a close game in the first quarter and a half before they kind of separated. But yeah, those are three really good games. Which one's your favorite, Cal? Which one are you looking forward to the most?
I think Utah-Stanford, because I think we talked about Utah dropping two of three now, and obviously they've dealt with a few injuries here and there, but you know, Peely came back. She didn't miss an entire game. And they looked okay without Gianna Neepkins after she got hurt, and same with Palmer. So it's not just that. This last stretch here, Utah, something else is going on, and Stanford's a tough opponent to have to bust out of a slump against. But these other two matchups, really excited for too, because Texas and TCU, both teams dealing with a star injury, Roy Harmon out for the year, but Texas still took apart West Virginia the other day, which was really impressive to me. TCU starting a few weeks here without Sedona Prince, so even a bigger load, like we said, on Madison Connor, Jaden Owens. And then North Carolina, Florida State. North Carolina, like you said, they beat Notre Dame the other day, and their defense played really well in that game. When they beat Oklahoma earlier in the year, now Oklahoma couldn't buy a shot, but still North Carolina's defense stepped up. We've seen their defense play really well against some good, good offensive teams. And this is another one of those matchups where you play a team like Florida State who knows how to push the pace and score the ball, and a team like North Carolina who is going to want to do everything they can to take them out of that and force them into tough half court looks. It's going to be, I think, a fantastic chess match. So all three are really good.
Yeah, I think North Carolina FSU is probably my favorite matchup out of those three that I'm looking forward to. But let us know which one you're looking forward to, whether that's TCU Texas, North Carolina FSU, or Stanford Utah. That'll be happening all of this week. What a loaded episode we had today. So thank you so much for sticking around till the end if you are still here with us. Her Who Stats is covering college basketball as always throughout the week. Make sure you're following us on socials at Her Who Stats, myself at Krina MM. You got Calvin at C Wetzel 31. Cal, any last thoughts before we wrap up this podcast?
I just want to say this was a great pancake. I feel very full from this pancake.
I think we made a whole batch of really good pancakes.
Plural pancakes. You're right.
Wow. And now I'm hungry, which means it's time to go eat. But thank you so much for tuning into Coast to Coast, and we will see you next Tuesday.